The Archbishop of Canterbury has today been expressing his fears for Christians who live in the Middle East in the wake of the Arab Spring. He's told this programme that it's a very anxious time for Christian communities and expressed his fears that people are coming in from traditional sites of extremism to launch attacks on Christians in Egypt. They have been protesting against persecution. Coptic Christians on a march after the burning of a church south of Cairo. Sectarian tensions aren't new there, where Coptic communities make up around 10% of the population of 80 million, but the frequency and intensity of clashes have increased since the overthrow of President Mubarak. Most Christians in the region are concentrated in Iraq, Lebanon, Syria, and the countries of the Holy Land, Israel, Jordan, the West Bank. The Archbishop describes the treatment of Christians in Iraq as a form of ethnic cleansing. But Syria has been considered one of the easier Middle Eastern countries for Christians to live in. The Assad regime has clamped down hard on extreme forms of Islam. I went to interview the Archbishop of Canterbury, Dr. Rowan Williams, at Lambeth Palace in London. What did he think about the events of the Arab Spring?
I think I was rather surprised at the speed with which things spread. Although, as a visitor to the region over quite a few years, I have seen where some of the tensions are. So I suppose it would have been predictable that something would happen. But the rapidity with which things unfolded, especially in Egypt, and more recently in Syria, that has been a surprise.
Do you think that history will judge this to have been a force for good?
I think what's happened is that a whole culture, you might say, in a number of regional states, of impunity, non-accountability and so forth, has been challenged at its root. That has to be a good thing as we look back. And, of course, the urgent question then is what goes into the vacuum that that leaves.
And what concerns do you have about that vacuum, and in particular about the treatment of Christians?
One of the paradoxes is that actually Christians have done moderately well under some of the more autocratic regimes in the region, partly because these have been regimes that have kept Islamic extremism in check, and therefore they've been qualified good news for Christians and indeed for other minorities. And it's important to remember that Christians are not the only minorities here. There are Muslim minorities, other kinds of Muslims. What I think qualifies that and what is really quite good news is what we've seen a great deal of in Egypt. And that's, of course, the fact that Muslims have rallied around Christians in a time of pressure, that Christians and Muslims were standing shoulder to shoulder in the early days of the demonstrations in Egypt, and that also the Grand Imam of Al-Azhar in Cairo has initiated the setting up of what they're calling a Bayt al-Ela, a house of the family, literally. That is a forum for religious leadership, Muslim and Christian, to talk about public issues, political issues.
But this must be an anxious time for Christian communities.
There's no doubt at all that it's a very anxious time for Christian communities. There have been extremist atrocities already, especially in Egypt. And perhaps rather more than we've been aware of in this country, the news we have here is not encouraging on that front, I have to say. It's a fairly consistent pattern over a number of months. And although at leadership level in the Muslim community in Egypt there's clear condemnation of this, absolutely crystal clear condemnation, it's evident that there are other forces at work, which may, of course, not be native Egyptian.
Really, who are they?
Well, we don't really know, but there's certainly some signs that there may be people coming in from the more traditional sites of extremism, whether Saudi Arabia or elsewhere. I would venture a guess that there's some interest in northern Sudan in the future of Egypt as well.
Really, so these are the kind of areas you're describing from which Al-Qaeda comes?
Quite.
And do you think that you can see their hand at work?
I wouldn't like to speculate, but there are forces at work.
You've talked about problems for the Christians in the area being a form of ethnic cleansing. What did you mean by that?
I mean the effect of violent extremism in Iraq and in one or two other areas, which I'll come to in a moment, has been to make life simply unsustainable for Christians in many of these areas. Take northern Iraq, where Christian populations have lived for most of the last 2,000 years and lived alongside Muslims. The level of pressure there now is extreme, and death threats to individuals, to Christian leaders, continue. More and more there's talk of an enclave solution to the problem in Iraq, that is a sort of safe territory for Christians, which Christians and their leaders don't particularly want, and who would. But many would think it's almost the only practical outcome now.
But that's a strong term to use, isn't it, ethnic cleansing?
It's a strong term, but I think not disproportionate where Iraq is concerned. The level of violence has been extreme. I had the rather harrowing experience of meeting a large number of Iraqi refugees in Syria a couple of years ago and listening to a lot of individual stories about the kind of pressure to which people were subjected, the kind of threats against people's families, against their children, which drove them out of their homes and eventually out of the country. I think there are still perhaps too few people in this country who are aware of the hemorrhaging of Christian populations from the Holy Land. The fact that Bethlehem, a majority Christian city, just a couple of decades ago, is now very definitely a place where Christians are a marginalised minority. We want the public profile of the situation of Christians there to be better known. And we see that as, of course, part of a general hope to raise the profile of Christians in the region.
Would you see what's happening in Bethlehem as another example of what you've described as ethnic cleansing?
It's not ethnic cleansing exactly, because it's been far less deliberate than that, I think. What we've seen, though, is a kind of Newtonian passing on of energy or force from one body to another, so that some Muslim populations in the West Bank, under pressure, move away from certain areas like Hebron, move into other areas like Bethlehem, and there's no much else for Christian populations to go except away from Palestine. The Christian population in Egypt, which is, of course, numerically quite substantial, has not until fairly recently been thinking much about migration. But what I'm hearing more and more in recent weeks and months is that talk of migrating is becoming a lot more common. The pressures there are not quite what they've been in Iraq nor in Palestine, but clearly the Copts in particular in Egypt are beginning to feel that that may be the shape of the future for them also. That's where a great deal of the anxiety in Egypt is coming from.
Now, Syria is a country where a very autocratic regime has meant relative tolerance for Christians. The Assad government is now under pressure. Is that creating anxiety in the Christian community there?
I think, again, we have a situation where other minorities are involved too, but of course I hear those anxieties. And I think although the surface has looked quite peaceful for a few years, Christians I know in Syria have been aware that things are building up to breaking point. And I think that all the minorities are anxious at the moment in Syria.
There is an irony, though, isn't there, that while I presume you support the rise of democracy in lots of these countries, at the same time you're anxious about what that democracy might throw up in the form of Islamist parties which would be intolerant of Christianity.
This is where I think the actual roots of the protests earlier this year do matter. The impulse for this did not come from Muslim extremism. It came from a broadly liberal, democratically serious segment of the population who are not, I think, going to give up easily their own hopes of an inclusive participatory democracy. So I think in the long term, of course, a real participatory democracy in the region is bound to be in the interests of minorities, because good democracies look after minorities.
There's been a lot of talk about ways of supporting what's been happening in the Arab Spring, is that the international community should donate towards a Marshall Fund to offer financial support. Do you think there should be conditions tied to that, for example, the protection of minorities like Christians?
It seems to me quite sensible that if we are going to, let's say, invest in the future of a democratic politics in the region, we should assume that carries with it obligations to minorities, all minorities.
Finally, are you overall, when you look at the events of the Arab Spring, are you optimistic or pessimistic about the future?
Guardedly optimistic. The problems are enormous, and the level of violence and intimidation that security forces in Syria are now taking forward is really appalling. That being said, to use an obvious crude metaphor, the milk is out of the bottle. I don't think there's any way in which the repressive regimes of the region can just reassert the old order now. And we've seen that in Libya very dramatically. It just can't be done. The hopes are too vivid, too strong. The pressure is, I won't say irresistible, but it can't be ignored. And that means that change will have to come. And there is enough of that commitment to a pluralist democratic future there, I think, for us to be cautiously hopeful about it.